online
at bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is the UK's home of live news and live sport.
5live.
Spike, tell us the story of Inside Man.
Well, Inside Man is my new film. That's a bank heist thriller, something that people probably not expect from me, with the all-star stellar cast of Denzel Washington, your own Clive Owen, Jodie Foster, William Dafoe, Christopher Plummer, and your own Chiwetel Ejiofor. So the cast is hellified.
Now, I have never heard, we have these conversations occasionally about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Has there ever been a bad movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman? But your friend there, Chewy, I don't think he's done a bad movie, because every time Mr. Ejiofor is in a movie, Mark always says another extraordinary, but even if the movie's terrible.
He has never yet put a foot wrong. It is absolutely true. It's extraordinary.
I think he must be close to the most highly, you know, in terms of the last 12, 18 months, the most highly acclaimed British actor going in terms of the reviews.
Well, it's funny because at that BAFTA Awards recently, there was a rising star thing, and it was between him and James McAvoy, and James McAvoy actually ended up winning it. But I was convinced that Chiwetel Ejiofor was going to win it, because I thought, you know, Kinky Boots and Serenity in the same year is just absolutely extraordinary. And now, of course, Inside Man. So.
Was he in Four Brothers too with John Singleton.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So he was your choice, Spike?
Yes, he's moved to New York, and we just started hanging out, and I just thought it'd be a good idea to have him and Denzel play partners, New York City detectives.
Does Chewie wear an Arsenal shirt as well? Is that how you
got
into
Thierry
Henry?
No, that's not his team. I forgot his team, but it's not Arsenal.
So, the story. Well, it's some good news next time.
Can I take this moment to very quickly tell you my very brief Chewie as your full story, which was that.
Is it good?
Very quick.
Is
at the
it interesting?
No, it'll be quick. It'll take longer if you do that. At the BAFTA Awards, he was there with this very glamorous woman who I took to be his wife, and I said hello to her, and it was only a bit later on that it wasn't his wife at all, it was his mum, who is a fabulous looking woman. There you go.
So you said the right thing. You might have gotten punched, right?
Well, if I'd said to his wife, I take it you're Chewie's mom, that would have gone down badly, yes.
So will people be surprised by this movie, Spike, because it doesn't appear to be political or it doesn't appear to have a message because it is a heist movie?
Yes, but we're very slick with this one. We slip stuff in, but this is really a throwback to those 70 films, especially Sidney Lumet's great film Dog Day Afternoon starring Al Pacino. So there's several homages to that film, but it's still contemporary, still today in New York, the world post 9/11 New York City. And to see Denzel go toe to toe with Clive Owen, the same thing with Jodie Foster. See, Denzel in this film has conflict with Clive, with Jodie, William Dafoe, Christopher Plummer, and to see these great actors go at it. You know, it's a wonderful experience.
In what way is it a post 9/11 movie?
Well, I think the world has changed since 9/11. So you see, I'm not going to describe it, but there's several things you'll see in the film. You know that this is, plus it takes place in the Wall Street area, you know. So just walking the streets in there, you see the bomb-sniffing dogs there all the time. So there's evidence of that.
And of course, it's worth pointing out that the film you made before, 25th Hour, was very specifically post 9/11,
right,
which a key scene takes place in an apartment which overlooked Ground Zero. And in fact, at the time, I think it was quite controversial to have addressed 9/11 at all, because it was only 2002, that film, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not trying to brag, but we were the first film to shoot in New York City after 9/11. And Edward Norton and Philip Seymour Hoffman and I, we just felt that we cannot shoot in New York so close after 9/11, act like it didn't happen. So we incorporated that stuff was in the script at first. So we tried to incorporate those references into the script.
It's a fantastic cast that you've got for this movie. Can you get pretty much anyone you want?
No.
In a Spike Lee film?
No, because Denzel, this is the fourth time I've worked with Denzel. We love each other like brothers, but if I send a script to Denzel that's rubbish, he's not doing it. So it was really the material, this script, a first-time screenwriter. His name was Russell Gerwitz, and that's what attracted the caliber of talent that we were able to get for this film.
Because we discussed this when the Woody Allen movie came out with Mark. Woody seems to be able to get anyone that he wants.
Including Chiwetel Ejiofor, as it turns out.
Well, we just kind of assume that everyone wants Chewie and he's always going to be good.
Yeah.
But Woody Allen, it appears to the moviegoer that he can actually get anybody.
Yeah.
And it appears though Spike has just corrected us, it appears that he can too. Because if you've got Denzel Washington, Clive Owen, Jodie Foster, Willem Dafoe, I'm going to go and see that anyway, what anyone thinks.
Yeah, I would think so.
And what did you think?
What did I think of the film?
Yeah.
I think
you being a movie critic and all.
I thought it was a very, very interesting thriller, which starts out being a thriller, but actually turns out to be much more of a character piece as the film progresses. I mean, it's to do with the actors. It's to do with them interacting. I mean, it is a really stellar heavyweight cast. The fact that Jodie Foster plays what's effectively a supporting role, I cannot remember the last time. Actually, I can. It was in a Woody Allen film. The last time I saw Jodie Foster in a role which wasn't the lead role. So yeah, there's an awful lot of, you know, just watching actors hitting their stride really well. I think the thing that, as Spike says, it may surprise some viewers, is that it's not overtly political, although the politics are in there and there are certain conversations which, you know, are clearly significant, which we probably shouldn't discuss because they'll give away stuff about the plot of film. So the politics is in there. And, of course, the final revelation about what has been going on all involves war politics and racial politics in the end. But it's a much more kind of mainstream thriller than perhaps you would expect from a Spike Lee film, although it is still, the opening title still says a Spike Lee joint,
right?
And it's, so you know the territory that you're in. Clive Owen's great, I have to say. He's really, really good. But Chiwetel Ejiofor is just at that point in the moment when he's just, everything he does is great, and the scenes with him and Denzel Washington together you just think they're just great actors, and if you just give them space, they will do the job properly. It's not an action movie, although it is a heist movie and it is a thriller. It's not an action movie. It's very talky. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. And of course, you refer back to Dog Day Afternoon. If, like I do, you have a great fondness for 70s cinema, which actually allowed characters time to breathe, actually allowed characters time to develop, so that when something happened to them, you cared either way. Of course, that kind of has fallen very much into, you know, disfavor nowadays. Things have to be going along and blowing up every 5 seconds, and that doesn't happen. Well, there are action sequences in the film.
Do you find it easy to get funding now? Because I know you've had a couple of...
No, it's still a struggle. In fact, still a struggle. This year is going to be the 20th anniversary of my first film, She's Gotta Have It. And it was a struggle to get that film made. And that film only cost $175,000.
Wow.
And so I'm still facing, you know, on certain films, like for the last 5 years, I've been trying to do a film about Joe Louis and Max Schmeling. Bud Schulberg, the great Bud Schulberg, and I co-wrote the script. Bud wrote On the Waterfront, What Makes Sammy Run. Bud is 93 years old. Wow. Terrence Howard's going to play Joe Louis. Hugh Jackman's going to play Max Schmeling. In this film, we have Hitler, Goebbels, FDR, Lena Horne, Sugar Ray Robinson, Mussolini. I mean, it's a epic. And
didn't you try and get Arnold Schwarzenegger to play the Max?
We just had a meeting, but that wasn't gonna work because he doesn't want to be associated too much to anything to do with German because there've been some allegations about his past anyway. Yes, so
maybe it was
this before he was running for governor too.
That was a non-starter in the first place, wasn't it?
But so we're now with Terrence getting an Oscar nomination for Best Actor in Hustle and Flow, and hopefully with this film.
Was that you touching wood? Was that?
Yes, yeah. Knock on wood. Hopefully with this film being successful, make it easier to get this Joe Louis film made.
What's the Joe Louis film going to be called?
Save Us, Joe Louis.
The clue's in the title.
Yeah. Right, some listeners, we'll do some more of this in a moment. This from Tom in Hackney. What did Spike think of A, Crash, and B, Crash winning Best Picture?
You could just say we're not talking about the David Cronenberg Crash, just for the cineasts out there.
Yes, I liked Crash, and it was good to see those great actors working in ensemble. There was no way in the world the Academy of Motion Picture Art and Science was going to give Best Picture to Brokeback. That wasn't going to happen.
Why?
Why not?
They're not going to do it.
Why?
They're not going to give a Best Picture to two gay cowboys. It's not going to happen. You know, they let Ang Lee, you know, Ang and I were classmates together at NYU, so they'll get Ang Lee Best Direct and stuff like that, but no way in the world were they going to...
Because it's a story about two gay guys.
Yes.
But we always had this impression that
What's wrong?
If there
what,
is
Hollywood, any, Hollywood is so liberal?
Yeah, and George Clooney made that big speech about, I am proud to be out of touch. You know, Hollywood is out of touch. But, we lead the conversation
and
about
AIDS. They did give the best film Oscar wrongly, as it happens, to Philadelphia, in which Tom Hanks played the least gay man on the planet. But
do they have any scenes of intimacy in Philadelphia?
No, the point.
That's the point. That's why that was like a safe homosexual. That was homosexual light. Now, I like to say one thing. Like, I love George Clooney, but his thinking to use Hattie McDaniel winning the Academy Award as an example how progressive Hollywood is crazy. First of all, Hattie McDaniel played a mammy. The film was Gone with the Wind. Mm-hmm. Gone with the Wind is basically saying the Confederacy should have won and there should still be slaves in this country. Also, it took Hattie McDaniel won in 1939. It took to, 2003 for another black woman to win? So how can you use that? How can you use Hattie McDaniel winning first? Also, when she won the Oscar, she had to sit in the back of the room, too. And you're going to use that example of how liberal Hollywood is? I love George, but that was the wrong analogy to use as an example how progressive Hollywood is.
Sean in Finsbury Park. Simon, great to hear Spike is a football fan. Will he be following the USA at this summer's World Cup?
No.
Okay.
Brazil.
Why would you want to follow Brazil?
Because.
Just because they're going to win it.
Because they play the game the way I love it. You know, even though I'm American, I'm going for Brazil. I know that might sound unpatriotic. There's some people in the United States of America, but I'm pulling for Brazil. And I will wear my green and yellow in Germany this summer.
With a side order of USA if needed.
Are you allowed, under the newly re-signed Patriot Act, are you allowed to
support I don't think so.
No, you're not allowed back in the
States. I might get shot by a shotgun or Dick Cheney, huh?
Rodney in Manchester. As a massive fan of Spike Lee's films, can I start by saying Do the Right Thing is a classic and that no other film could have done the song Fight the Power justice like the aforementioned film did? Given Mr. Lee's movies tend to examine varied and complex issues, would Mr. Lee be kind enough to share his thoughts on the U.S. government's response to the victims of Katrina? As I read, he was to produce a documentary on the aftermath of Katrina. That is your next movie.
Yes, thank you for that question. I am in the process of doing a feature-length documentary on Katrina's for HBO. And the title is called When the Levees Broke. And it's going to be four hours. And we have stuff that's just amazing in it. And
Has the story not been told yet?
Not the way we're going to tell it. Not the in-depth way we're going to do it. We've been down to New Orleans three times. We just came back last week from Mardi Gras week, which was a six-month mark when Katrina hit, and it is still the same. This is a landmark in American history. Never before has the United States government turned its back on its own citizens on U.S. soil. The United States of America is so quick to go to the four corners of the earth to help other people, other nations, with national disasters or whatnot, under the guise of bringing democracy. But when this thing occurred, this administration was very, 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 very slow in responding, and things are still in disarray.
Why do you think they were so slow?
Because Louisiana, for the most part, is poor, white, and black people. The majority of them did not vote Republican. And even though 40% of the nation's gas and oil goes to that region, they just didn't care. And I think that was demonstrated by our president when he had to break short his vacation. He's also taken more vacations than any other president in history of the United States of America, too. He didn't even stop in New Orleans. He just told the pilot to lower the plane so he could fly over it. I think it was demonstrated by when people were drowning or people on top of their roofs, waving white towels, stuff to be picked up by helicopters. Miss Condoleezza Rice was going up and down Madison Avenue buying Ferragamo shoes. Then that night she went to see Spamalot on Broadway while people were dying in you know, in the Gulf region. So I think, I mean, and then you look at Chertoff and Brown. You say FEMA in New Orleans, you could get punched. That is a dirty word.
Just explain what their role should have been and who they are.
I think, who?
FEMA, just explain to a British audience. I mean, we're familiar with the story, but not with the organization of FEMA.
Well, FEMA is supposed to be the organization that helps United States of American citizens, you know, in case of national disasters or terrorist attacks. And it's just bureaucracy. I mean, and people still have not gotten their trailers, and it's crazy.
And the head of FEMA had to resign, didn't it?
Yes.
Do you think that the actions of the U.S. government were sort of benign neglect, if you want, or are you suggesting that it was malicious? You know,
I think it was malicious. Another thing that is that when you have a national disaster, usually each state has a National Guard that will help, you know, bring order. But New Orleans, Louisiana, which is one of the largest National Guards of any state, they're all in Iraq. They weren't there.
But you compared it to, you said that it put you in mind of Chinatown, which, of course, is the great template of, right, you know, corrupt government and water, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, what exactly did you mean by that?
Well, in doing the research and speaking to many of the black citizens of New Orleans, many of them told me that they will swear on a stack of Bibles that they heard the explosion, and they think that those levees were blown up. Now, as a documentary filmmaker, I think it's my duty to let these people voice their opinions. Also, there's a history of this. In 1927, levees were blown up to save one particular neighborhood, and one other neighborhood had to be sacrificed. In 65, Hurricane Betsy, the same thing happened. So I think that we should not be quick to dismiss people who say this, oh, they're just crazy black people. But this stuff is based upon, you know, history. There was a thing called the Tuskegee Experiment. I don't know if you know about this. But during the 1920s, the United States government conducted experiments on black men to see what would happen to them if syphilis was left untreated. This is documented. So these are all these things that are in the air, and people, like, you know, they don't put it past the government to do some crazy stuff.
So it's your so this suggestion from the people that you were speaking to,
right,
is that some of the levees were blown up to save some areas at the expense of others.
Yes.
We did a conversation about conspiracy theories a couple of weeks ago on the program.
And was Oliver Stone on it?
No, he wasn't. But we had someone saying quite seriously that the World Trade Center.
I've heard that too.
Those two buildings, the way that they fell, they must have been blown up from within.
My wife believes to this day that the United States government was behind. And she's not the only one.
But that's crazy, isn't it? There's no evidence to suggest that. I mean, if you make a documentary film, you have to have some evidence to be suggesting these things, other than just someone saying, do you know what? I heard an explosion.
But as a documentary filmmaker, I still think that people should have the right to express. Of course, they didn't get a recording of that explosion, but I still think, as a documentary filmmaker, you know, I also interviewed engineers who said the opposite. That is crazy. That it was the faulty building of the levees that it had to do. So you show both sides.
So you're just reflecting the discussion which is actually happening.
Yes.
But you're going to come to some conclusions yourself as the director.
No, we're going to let the audience make it their mind, like we always do. You do the right thing. And to do the right thing is left up to the audience to figure out what is the right.
Sure,
what is the right thing to do?
Sure, but Spike Lee comes to a conclusion as Spike Lee, doesn't he?
Yeah, but that doesn't have to be at the end of my films, though. I really try, especially going this next 20-year period, I don't want to dictate to the audience what they should think or feel. You know, I respect their intelligence too much to do that.
Thank you, Spike Lee.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is the UK's home of live news and live sport.
Five Live.
Movies coming out on Friday include These Foolish Things. Ushpizin, is that right?
Ushpizin, yes.
Where's that from?
That's Israeli.
Okay, and why don't we start with the one which is certainly was even making some headlines in the States when we were there, V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta, the long-awaited and indeed long-delayed adaptation of Alan Moore's infamous graphic novel, set the film at least, set in near-future Britain, which has become a totalitarian state lorded over by a Big Brother-style character played by John Hurt. Hugo Weaving, who incidentally replaced James Purefoy in the lead role.
Was the idea that James Purefoy couldn't actually... Well, there was some suggestion that he wasn't happy behind the mask.
Well, it's really odd because the lead character, at no point do you see their face. I mean, unlike the Judge Dredd thing in which Sylvester Stallone said, "I'm not going to play Judge Dredd unless I could take the bucket off my head." And they went, OK. And then he took it off and you went, oh, it's Sylvester Stallone. In V for Vendetta, the mask stays on. So, frankly, it could be... I mean, I wondered at one point whether any of what we see on screen is not Hugo Weaving, whether it is, in fact, Mr. Purefoy, but we shall never know.
So could it be anyone?
Well, no. I mean, yes, but no. You don't know.
Well, yes or no. Could it be anyone?
Well, it could be anyone. The voice is all of a piece. Although I have to confess that watching the movie, I forgot that it was Hugo Weaving who played the lead role, who I liked very much. And I started trying to figure out whose voice is that. And I actually started thinking it was Rowan Atkinson. Okay.
So it could be. I mean, we're into Darth Vader territory, because it could be anyone, frankly, behind the mask and doing the work.
Well, the amazing thing about Vader is that it's four people, isn't it, altogether? Because it's that pretty boy Nitwit who does him in the early films. It's
Keith Prowse, the Green Cross.
David Prowse, the Green Cross.
Keith Prowse being the ticket office.
Yeah.
It's not him.
No, not him.
Anyway,
James
whoever
Earl,
it is.
James Earl Jones doing the voice. And then in the original end of Return of the Jedi, when they take the bucket off Darth Vader's head, it's not any of those. It's somebody else who they then had to subsequently replace with the pretty boy Hayden Christensen. Four people to play Darth
Vader. Hence the email last week when we were in New York talking about this with a frustrated listener thinking, I really like Hugo Weaving, but I don't get to see him.
But he is good. He is a good actor in the same way as I made the comparison before that, you know, you can, John Hurt playing the Elephant Man with the stuff on his head, you never get to see his face, but acting is about more than seeing somebody's face. It is to do with physicality, and in fact, it is a very physical performance. And his delivery of the lines is, you know, ripe in that way, even if it does occasionally go into what I consider to be Blackadder territory. Now, interesting thing about the movie is, while I was watching it, I did wonder whether or not sedition was still a criminal offence, because the whole plot is, he is latter-day Guy Fawkes. He's living in a totalitarian state. It's not to Britain today. It's a future vision of Britain. But the mission that he's on is to blow up the Houses of Parliament. Now, of course, remember the 5th of November. The reason that we all remember that is because it's written into British consciousness as almost the worst thing that ever happened in history. Consequently, we don't celebrate Guy Fawkes doing it. We celebrate...
The fact that he was caught.
The fact that he was caught and the fact that we then dealt with him rather strictly. I think this has been slightly lost, perhaps, on some of the American audiences. The other thing is that I think will raise some alarm bells is that at one point it becomes apparent that part of V's plot involves using an admittedly disused but a subway train, an underground train packed with explosives. And the suggestion was for a long time that the November 5th release date that the film had for last year, which they said it was delayed because they didn't get some of the special effects shots finished. And indeed, there are a lot of special effects shots, which I'm sure took a long time. But it was also suggested that they moved it away because of the terrorist attacks on London. They just thought people are not going to feel comfortable about this kind of stuff being used in this context. So, to get some sense of perspective over the whole thing, firstly, let it be said that Alan Moore has disowned the project. Well, Alan Moore disowns everything. He disowns everything that he's involved with to do with the big screen. He disowned From Hell, he disowned League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he will presumably disown The Watchmen, if indeed The Watchmen happens, because the last time Paul Greengrass was on the programme...
Yeah, that's disappeared, though, I think.
Is that right?
I think that's gone down the tube.
OK, well, it'll happen at some point under somebody, and when it does, Alan Moore will doubtless disown it. Don't be put off by the fact that he has disowned it, because that's just he doesn't like the films. As far as the revolutionary stuff is concerned, it is about people rising up and overthrowing the government, even if those people include Stephen Fry, who on at least one occasion is seen preparing Eggy in the Basket, which, let's face it, is not an overly revolutionary thing to do, and And it is a very, very Stephen Fry performance. I rather enjoyed the film. I rather enjoyed the fact that in a very pop way, it was almost like an advert for Anarchy in the UK. I mean, it's clearly filmed by outsiders. It's produced by the Wachowskis, written by the Wachowskis, pardon me. It's produced by Joel Silver. So it has an exploitation edge to it, which, as you know, I'm a fan of exploitation movies. I think if you're going to deal with politics and terrorism and the difference between terrorism and freedom fighting, I'm perfectly happy for it to be done in a pop trashy way, because in many ways those kind of films get closer to having something interesting to say than the ponderous kind of Oliver Stone conspiracy theory movies, which would be great if you could just manage to stay awake after having your head kicked in by people lecturing you. So I like all that. The design is very, very obviously comic strip, and this has offended an awful lot of comic strip fans because they think it's too obvious, they think it's not dark enough, they think it's not close enough to the Alan Moore original. Well, I haven't read the Alan Moore original, and I am sure that the differences between the two of them are vast. I think the only way you can deal with V for Vendetta, the movie, is to do exactly what Alan Moore would like you to do, which is to remove his name from the equation and see it as a standalone piece of work. And as a standalone piece of, frankly, silly, but rather adventurous, pot-boiling comic strip mayhem, it could be a stupid episode of The Avengers, but in fact it ends up being much more than that, and I enjoyed it much, much more than I expected. I thought Hugo Weaving was good fun. I thought Natalie Portman partly redeemed herself after some of the performances which she's done recently, which have just annoyed me like mad. I think that it's jolly and vibrant in all the right kind of ways, even when that means that occasionally it's cronky and a little bit stupid. And I think it sails just close enough to the wind in terms of dealing with issues which are sensitive in people's minds, particularly when does a terrorist become a freedom fighter and when does a freedom fighter become a terrorist. And it does have just the right level of...
Well, it sounds, what you're saying is there's no doubt that he is a terrorist.
Oh, he is a terrorist.
But because he's operating against...
a totalitarian government.
He's a chancellor, is he?
Pardon me?
Is he called the chancellor, not the prime minister?
The John Hurt character, who's basically Big Brother, appears on huge big television screens. And, you know, so we know where we are. But bear in mind, of course, Big Brother, 1984, was written in 1948, and it's, you know, the way that people do those things is you project into the future, but you're actually saying something about today. I mean, one of the things, for example, they said in the Variety review was that they had missed some tricks about, you know, nudging the Blair government and saying, you know, making points about the Blair government's dependency on PC sensibilities. There's also a lovely thing in the Variety review which Leslie Felprin wrote, which said that the director, James McTeague, at one point said that he had in mind, whilst he was making V for Vendetta, the film Battle of Algiers, and she said this is clearly a different version of the Battle of Algiers and the famous film which we all know. It's clearly some absolutely mad, pop-tastic piece of fluff. I mean, it is fluff, it is silly, it is camp, but it is enjoyable, and I came out of it thinking, I want to go home and play a Sex Pistols album, and that is not a bad thing.
John Hurt having a bit of a revival then, early on in this year, because he's a bounty hunter in The Proposition, which we reviewed on Friday.
But John Hurt seems to just work and work and work and work and work. I mean, he makes an awful lot of movies. He made a couple of short films last year as well. He's just, you know, he just does a lot of work. He was in the Ian Softley film, which very, very few people saw, Skeleton Key. And, you know, I mean, he just works a lot, and, you know, and good for him. Anyway, so it's really not bad. Hugo Weaving, you don't see his face, but he does the best that he can. I think it's just edgy enough to be entertaining. And I genuinely did wonder, as I was watching it, if sedition is still against the law, at what point, how long will it take somebody? I mean, if Alex Walker, the venerated critic of the Evening Standard, was here, he would have walked out, I'm sure. He would have taken offense.
In outrage?
Yeah, and God bless him. I think that's, you know, that's kind of quite a good thing.
All the movie reviews available as a download, and you can have them as a podcast. All the details on the 5 Live website, bbc.co.uk/5live. You can subscribe to get them every week, as indeed you can subscribe to the Daily Mayo, and you get something every day sent to your computer to listen to on your...
Daily Mayo charting currently at number 11, I believe.
Number 10, actually.
Number 10, which is way above me, so thanks for that.
Yeah, but with the greatest respect to you, you're on once a week and I'm on five times.
So that makes it all right,
Well, probably. That probably counts in these things. What else is new?
OK, well, let's pass over these foolish things, which actually opened last Friday, and I thought we should mention it, but actually we're running out of time. So two other movies which are more important. Firstly, Chotzi, which won the Oscar.
So actually you're ignoring it for the second time, are you?
Well, shall I do it quickly? It makes Mrs. Henderson Presents look like Lawrence of Arabia. It is a story about young British thesps in London keeping their chin up whilst, you know, the Bally War's going to come. And she just wants to be an actress. And she goes for tea with people and her agent's a little bit creepy. But you know what? They're these two guys and one of them's absolutely spiffing and the other one's a little less spiffing, but she likes him anyway. But in the end, he's got to go off and fly a Spitfire. But Josh, you know, it's nonsense. Absolute toilet. And it's got Angelica Houston and Terence Stamp in absolutely name and shame them roles, and it'll be off screens by next Friday, and believe me, not a moment too soon.
Okay, well, don't do that.
I won't do that then. Tsotsi, which won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film, which is a semi-home win because it's a South African-British co-production. After last week's L'Enfant, which we talked about in New York, it's another story about childhood imperiled by callous youths. Tsotsi means thug in the South African dialect in which the film is set. It's a story about a gang leader in one of the Soweto suburbs of Johannesburg who is involved in a carjacking. He accidentally kidnaps a child who he then ends up looking after. And as a result of having this child, he's... up till that point, hideous criminal life starts to turn around. It's a tough film, but it does have a redemptive edge to it. I don't think it's a masterpiece, and personally, I wouldn't have given the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar to it. Personally, I would have given that to Hidden, but as we know, Hidden didn't qualify because it was an Austrian artwork that had French language, and consequently the Oscars couldn't decide which country it came from.
Well, it still makes it foreign.
No, exactly, but the Oscars couldn't get their head around that. It has to be submitted by a single country. France wouldn't submit it because it's directed by an Austrian, and the Austrians couldn't submit it because it was in French. So Tsotsi ends up winning, which, you know...
By default.
Well, I would think so. Personally, Tsotsi came on for me like a cross between City of God and L'Enfant. It had that kind of that atmosphere of really being inside an environment that most people, I would think, in the UK know nothing about. And it had a real smack of authenticity and a couple of really, really fine performances. It's not brilliant, but it is pretty good. It's got a great soundtrack. It's got flashes of really impressive work about it. And I think that, you know, it's... probably those involved in it will go on to do greater things. The real surprise for me, however, was this movie Ushpizin, which is an Israeli movie, which was an absolute treat. And I went in with no expectation at all. I don't know anything about what the title meant. It's a story about this devout Jewish couple in Israel preparing for the Sukkot holiday, which I didn't know anything about either because, you know, I was brought up a Methodist. What do I know, right? It's a holiday in which, if you're devout, you have to go and live in temporary dwellings during the holiday. And
did the Methodists have anything like that?
No. Well, I mean, you know, in the... No. No, let's not even go there. They have no money, they have few friends, they have no children. They both pray to God for help, and God, being God, moves in a mysterious way and gives them what they pray for, but in very strange and testing fashion. And what basically happens is they end up living in a temporary accommodation. These two guys turn up from our hero's past, and they turn out to be criminal types, and him then being friendly and neighbourly towards them proves to be what he interprets as a test from the Almighty. It's an extraordinary film. It's absolutely lovely. It's got a fantastic, fantastic central performance by Shuli Rand, who apparently retired from acting to pursue his religion, came back for this on two conditions. One of them was that his real-life wife played his wife, and also that when it played in Israel, it didn't play on the Sabbath. It's beautifully balanced between the secular and the religious. There are miracles in it, but they're only miracles if you choose to see them as that. It's all those things that are, you know, it's heartwarming, it's life-affirming, it's uplifting, it's charming. It's just a real treat.
Movie of the upcoming week?
Well, I really like V for Vendetta. So if you want big and stupid, V for Vendetta, but don't miss Ushpizin because it's just a joy.